Who do you follow? Who are the leaders that you follow? I think that's a pertinent issue for us, you know, as we think about the leader of our country. Can we be sure it hasn't changed or won't change? But as James did model for us so well, it's good to pray for our leaders. So please can I encourage you to be praying for Scott and the rest of the leaders of our country. Who we follow matters. We might like to think that we're the masters of our own destiny, but unfortunately the reality is we will follow somebody. Might be our government, could be your lecturers as they assign you course content and when to do your assignments and so on. Or it might be the CEOs of Apple or Google as you pick a side. And so we all follow people. So I think you'd agree who we follow really matters, doesn't it? Now for Christians, they're people who follow Jesus as their leader. The group, we're part of a group here, evangelical students, and we are those who follow Jesus as our king. But have you ever considered why? Why someone would follow Jesus as their king? Why do people follow Jesus? Why might you follow Jesus if you don't follow him yet? Could it be to tick some sort of spiritual box? You know, I've got other areas of my life in order. I've got my personal life in order. I've sort of got my professional academic life in order. And now I've got to get my spiritual life in order. Like, Jesus, tick. Is it because it's a good thing to do? You know, my parents did it. It seems like to be a responsible adult, I should do something about religion. Maybe I'll go to church, get some good morals, teach them to my kids. That's what I used to think. Or perhaps you don't follow him, and why would you? He's just some normal bloke. What's he ever done for me? Why follow Jesus? Well, I think to answer that, we need to work out who Jesus is. Because why we follow people is tied to what kind of leader they are. And so as we consider why we should follow Jesus, we should consider what kind of leader Jesus is. Now, we're going to look at this section of Mark's biography of Jesus today, and we're going to see what kind of leader Jesus is. And it's not quite the picture you'd expect. It's not even the picture that his disciples had, because in this section of Mark's biography, Jesus goes about correcting their view of who he is as a leader. And he does this as he explains what his glory is, what his rule is, and what his mission is. And so we're going to look at those three things in turn. Jesus' glory, his rule, and his mission. And as we look at this section of Mark's biography, let me give you some background, because it's chapter 10, obviously. It's not the beginning, so let's make sure we're all on the same page. So Mark, in his biography, writes about the good news of Jesus. And in the first half, he's shown us who Jesus is, that he has this great power and authority. And also that he has this great compassion and love for people. And in the midpoint of Mark's biography, Jesus is revealed to be the Christ, that is God's king. And in chapter 8, we start to see what this Christ, what God's king has come to do. And as Jesus and his disciples head to Jerusalem, that's like kind of the capital city where the king would rule from, a couple of them come to ask Jesus whether they can share in his royal glory as he comes into his rule. But Jesus explains that they've not quite understood what kind of king he is, and so they've not understood what his glory will be. So let's have a look at that. What is Jesus' glory? Well, two of his disciples, James and John, they come to Jesus with this big request. They ask whether they can sit either side of Jesus when he comes into his glory, one at his left, one at his right. That's my left and my right. Yours are the other way around, obviously. They're very prominent disciples, these guys, part of Jesus' inner circles. It's not a ridiculous request. And they want to ensure that their position's sorted when Jesus comes in and is glorified as king. But Jesus sees that they've misunderstood where he's going. So while they're on about glory, he responds to them about a baptism and a cup. Have a look there in sentence 38. "You don't know what you're asking," Jesus says. "Can you drink the cup I drink? Or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said to them, "You will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared." Seems a weird way to respond to them, doesn't it? What's the meaning of this cup and baptism? Well, I think in general, it seems to be about sharing someone's fate, doesn't it? And so their agreement seems to make sense. They're saying, well, Jesus is going to be glorified. I want to be glorified, so I'll have whatever he's having, thanks. And they've shared up to share his cup, to share his fate. But Jesus tells them in verse 38, you guys don't know what you're doing signing up for this. They don't understand what Jesus' fate will be, and so they don't understand what this glory will look like. I think there's a couple things that explain to us why they've misunderstood these things. Firstly, Jesus has already explained where he's going to his disciples. These guys have a short attention span. They don't really get it. Because just before this section that we're reading, Jesus has told them. He said he's going to, it's not about glory as they would understand it, but rather Jesus is going to suffer and die. As he comes to Jerusalem, those who should welcome and honor him as king are going to condemn him to death. Jesus' fate, his glory, is his suffering and his death. But there's more, because secondly, that cup and baptism have a deeper meaning than simply just sharing in someone's fate. Jesus has used these terms specifically because they kind of have a background meaning as well. So the cup that Jesus would drink is not like this literal cup that, like Indiana Jones. If you haven't seen this movie, can I encourage you to go watch it? In Mark 14, so later on in this biography, Jesus asks that the cup be taken from him, which suggests to us that it's not something that you want. You see, drinking the cup has connotations from the Old Testament bit of the Bible, connotations about facing God's judgment. In a book of poems in the Bible called the Psalms, the cup is about drinking the punishment of God, something that's drunk by the wicked. So drinking the cup is facing the judgment of God. And so saying that about drinking the cup, Jesus is talking about facing the anger of God. The anger of God poured out against those who rebel against him. And so in this context, baptism doesn't really mean the thing that sometimes happens at churches, but I think is actually tied to judgment as well. Because while baptism, the kind of the word, can mean to wash clean, it can also mean to drown, to submerge in water, like being caught in rough surf. Jesus is going to the cross. There he will drink the cup of God's anger and be baptized into this judgment. That's where he's going to be glorified. Jesus' glory is his death on the cross. And the people at his right and left won't be James and John. Rather, there'll be two criminals who are also being executed alongside him. Now, James and John will share in the cup and baptism. They won't suffer in quite the same way, not facing the judgment of God in the same way, but they will share in Jesus' fate of humiliation and suffering. Because for those who would follow Jesus, that's the path. It's a path of suffering. Now, if you're here today and you say you're a Christian, that's your path. And so when life is hard for Christians, why are we surprised? When we're the butt of society's joke, or friends or family may think you're naive or even stupid for following Jesus, why are we surprised? Are we expecting glory in the here and now as James and John were expecting? Remember, they crucified our king. Now, if you're here and you've been thinking about becoming a Christian, you do need to hear this. Following Jesus involves following him in suffering. Jesus is glorified in his death as he faces the judgment of God, not what you'd expect of a king. So why follow him? Well, let's keep that idea in mind as we look at the next thing that Jesus corrects his disciples about. He explains what his rule looks like. So let's have a look at Jesus' rule. Whoops. In verse 41, the rest of the disciples, hearing about James and John's conversation, they get really annoyed with James and John. And it'd be great to think that they were annoyed at James and John because, oh, these guys have obviously misunderstood Jesus' glory. But looking at Jesus' response, it seems like they're annoyed because James and John have got in before them, right? They've snuck in to get those good positions. And so Jesus feels like, oh, okay, I've got to correct everybody, right? So he's going to explain to them the nature of his leadership, of his rule. And so firstly, he describes the rule of the world. Verse 42. Jesus called them together and he said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles, that is, non-Jews, lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them." Now that's a picture that that resonates, right? Worldly leadership seems to be about getting as much power as you can, trampling over others to get it. Those are rulers who lord it over them. And before we cast judgment on rulers out there who seem to like abuse their power, we're not so different. More often than not, I'll do what benefits me rather than others. At my core, I'm sort of selfish. Well, I am selfish, not sort of selfish. If I do something to help others, sometimes it's only if it's not a massive inconvenience to me or it doesn't negatively impact me. You know, I'll shout you lunch, but only if my lunch is already paid for. But that's not how it's to be with Jesus' rule, his leadership. Sentence 43. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. Whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. True leadership and greatness is not about serving yourself, but rather serving others. Completely upside down. Those who would be great, those who would be first, those who would get ahead, they're to be servants. They're to be slaves. And if you think about it, that's actually kind of also resonates. That's how our political system works. Or it's supposed to be like. The prime minister is supposed to use their power to serve people. It's even in the title, prime minister, the first minister, the first servant. And I said wrongly yesterday, that's the first servant of the people. I was corrected in a really wonderful way. She is the first servant of the queen. Isn't that great? But they're set there to serve the queen by serving their people. And even think about other language, like those who work in the government are called public servants, aren't they? Our leaders are supposed to be the ones who serve. Leaders are not to be the ones at the tables of honour in the banquet hall. They're supposed to be the people washing up the dishes. Greatness is about service. Those who follow Jesus in greatness are to serve others. It's like this company in the US. There's a company called Rogue, and they make gym equipment. And they're doing pretty well, I guess. And so every year, the owners of the company throw this massive barbecue for all their staff. Isn't that good? I'm feeling really hungry now, suddenly. But as the owners throw this barbecue, they're the ones flipping the burgers. They could be sitting at the table enjoying all the delicious meat that's being roasted, but instead they're the ones who are sweating at the grill as they prepare food, serving it up for their employees. Whoever wants to be great must be your servant. Like the disciples, I don't know how you feel about it, but I often get this wrong. I've been driven by the worldview. I think being great is about how accomplished I am. But notice what Jesus shows us here. Jesus shows me that greatness is not about, it's all about service, not impressiveness. And what would that look like if that were to take hold in our lives? For those of us who follow Jesus, are we known for our servant-hearted service of others? Do we consider the needs of friends and family before our own? Do we look to serve strangers that God's put around us, even when it costs us? Arriving home, instead of collapsing on the couch after a long day, helping out with dinner. Or I'm sure you're all, you know, getting sevens in your assignments. So imagine it being like only getting a six in an assignment so that you can help a friend get a four in theirs. Whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. This is the nature of Jesus' rule. He serves. Jesus is the king who suffers, and he's the king who serves. Again, not quite what you'd expect. So why follow him? Well, Jesus ties these two aspects of his leadership together, his suffering and his service, as he goes on to explain what his mission is. So what's Jesus' mission? Well, he explains it in verse 45. For the Son of Man, that's Jesus' royal title for himself, his kingly title, did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. The Son of Man is the king who deserves service, but instead he serves. And notice the way he does this. He gives his life to pay the ransom for others. Paying a ransom is basically paying the price to free somebody, isn't it? This is his mission. Jesus gives his life to pay the ransom to free many. It's an ultimate act of service. On Anzac Day, we remember those who gave their lives for our freedom. And so I guess the obvious question for us to answer is, what does Jesus free people from? Well, the Bible talks about it as slavery. You may not feel like you're a slave. You may only feel sometimes like you're a slave to study or something or assignments or your work. But the Bible says that people are actually enslaved to sin. That's a weird kind of religious word. But basically what it means is that people are addicted to living for themselves. They're enslaved to living for themselves. As we saw earlier, you know, leaders tend to use what they have for their own selfish gain. And if we're honest, it's all too natural to make decisions that benefit us, benefit ourselves, that are all about us. And that's a problem because the God who made us designed us to live for others, just as Jesus taught, to serve others. So as we live that kind of self-centered life and are enslaved, addicted to that, the heart of our enslavement is actually a disregard for God and what he says is best. We all follow someone. And those who are enslaved to sin simply follow what we think is best. We're enslaved. We follow ourselves. And in doing so, as we follow ourselves, we turn away from following God and we march to the beat of our own selfish drum. As we fail to follow God, disregard what he says about how to live, this enslavement to sin comes with consequences. We disregard the God who made us, and so we rightly deserve his judgment for not living as he would want us to. We are enslaved to sin and face the consequence of divine judgment. But Jesus gives his life to pay our ransom, to set us free from this slavery to sin and its consequences, to burst the bonds of slavery, to rescue us from the judgment of God. And his death does that by bearing the punishment of God. On the cross, Jesus drinks the cup of God's judgment, a judgment we deserve. Jesus is the King who suffers and the King who serves. He suffers death on the cross, bearing the judgment of God. And he does that so he might serve many, paying their ransom and freeing them from their slavery to sin and its consequences. This is Jesus' mission. Jesus is the King who suffers and serves, giving up his life to free and rescue people. This is why his death is his glory, for by his death he rescues people from their enslavement to sin. That's why it's worth following Jesus. If you're not a Christian and you don't yet follow him, this is why you should. Jesus is the servant king who gave up his life to free you from sin and rescue you from God's judgment. Though, as we've seen, following him is not an easy path. It's one of suffering and service. It's the only path that leads to freedom and rescue, where you are spared from the judgment of God. This is the reason to follow Jesus. So then how can we be saved? How can we be rescued? How can we start following Jesus? Well, Mark, in his biography, gives us an answer as he gives an example of someone responding to Jesus as he turns to follow Jesus, to follow this leader. So just after this section that we've read, Jesus interacts with a blind man, a guy called Bartimaeus. And he's sitting by the road begging. And as he hears Jesus is coming, he obviously doesn't see he's coming, he cries out to Jesus. And he makes such a racket that Jesus stops and calls him to come over. And he gets to go up and talk to Jesus. And Jesus asks him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And Bartimaeus says, "Teacher, I want to see." "Go," says Jesus, "your faith has healed you." And immediately Bartimaeus receives his sight and he follows Jesus on the road. The blind Bartimaeus knows he needs help. And so he calls out for it. He asks Jesus to heal him, to save him. And Jesus answers his request. Jesus heals him, saying that it's his faith that saves him, his trust in Jesus that saves him. Now notice it's not the good things that he has or hasn't done. It's not his background, religious background. It's not who his family is or anything like this. It's simply his trust in Jesus that saves him, that heals him. If you know you need saving, then all you need to do is trust. Trust Jesus to save you. Bartimaeus puts his trust in Jesus to save him, and he is saved. Now, the outworking of that faith, that trust, is that he gets up from the side of the road and he moves to follow Jesus. The faith that saves is a faith that follows. Bartimaeus has seen the hard path of following Jesus, but he also sees the salvation that Jesus offers. And so he puts his trust in Jesus and follows him, follows the servant king. Now today you might be like Bartimaeus, sitting on the side of the road watching the king walk by. The path of a Christian following the king who suffers and dies in service is a hard one. But it is the path of following the servant king who dies to free people from sin and rescue them from the judgment of God. It's the path of salvation. That's why people follow Jesus. He is the king who serves rather than takes. He gives his life to free people from their slavery to sin and save them from the judgment of God. Isn't that someone worth following? Now, if you, like Bartimaeus, know that you need help, all you need to do is ask Jesus to save you. That's all it takes. And it's a hard thing to ask for help, but we need to. We need saving. We need to be rescued from our slavery to sin and the coming judgment of God. So we must call on Jesus to save us. And remember that from Bartimaeus' example, all you need to do is trust. So how do you put your trust in Jesus? Well, you just ask him to save you and trust that he'll do it. And so one of the ways you can do that is you can pray a prayer. You can speak to God. And so there's a prayer in your handout, and it's on the screen there. And I'm going to say these words. And if this is something that you'd like to pray, why don't you follow along in the quietness of your own mind and pray these words. I'll say a line and then wait so you can pray in that pause. Dear God, sorry for the way that I've not lived up to your standards. I know that I need saving from your judgment. Thank you that Jesus is the servant king who came to die to save me from that judgment. Please save me. Help me to follow Jesus as my king. Amen. Now, no, friends, if you've prayed that prayer today, God has heard you. Jesus tells us that there are angels in heaven celebrating. And can I encourage you to tell somebody? It's fantastic news, and we would love to celebrate with you. If you saw that prayer and you're still thinking about Jesus, maybe you're not ready to pray that prayer, you've still got some questions. Well, the perfect place to ask those questions would be one of those Simply Christianity courses that are running in the week. Let us know you'd like to join one on your communication card or just turn up at the times. But we'd love to keep talking with you about Jesus. Because Jesus is the servant king who gives his life to free his people. Jesus is the king who is worth following.